We'll go to the next case of the morning, which is Malang Badji versus Alberto Gonzalez. Mr. Sharma Crawford.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is William Sharma Crawford. I'm here on behalf of Malang Badji. I'd like to address, in perhaps reverse order, government counsel's 28J submission. They've provided this court with a recent Supreme Court decision, which they contend supports their position that the courts have the discretion to raise untimeliness as an issue, even if it's been not raised by the parties on the other side. In this instance, Mr. Badji's decision was denied by the immigration judge. He was ordered removed. He filed an appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals. The Board of Immigration Appeals, the notice of appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals arrived late. It arrived accompanied with a motion to accept that notice out of time. Government counsel was served with the notice of appeal and the same motion. So government's counsel was on notice that the notice of appeal was out of time. The appeal was docketed by the Board of Immigration Appeals. A briefing schedule was issued. A briefing schedule was continued. Briefs from both sides were submitted, and it was submitted to a justice for decision. That judge issued a decision that he didn't have jurisdiction, that the appeal was untimely, and he ruled that they didn't have the jurisdiction to hear the case, and he denied the matter. In his decision, curiously, he states that he finds that the statement in the notice of appeal, at least I assume that's what he's discussing his wording, wasn't sufficient for him to take it on certification. So there appears that there was an alternate route for him to accept it, regardless of his statement that he was out of jurisdiction. Counsel brings forward the Supreme Court case, Patrick Day v. Donahue, a recent 2006 decision penned by Justice Ginsburg, which in it, Justice Ginsburg says the district court was able to raise untimeliness. Now, the facts of Day are it's a habeas petition by a prisoner. There is a computation under AEDPA as to the amount of time that he can file his habeas petition. He files it, and it's late.
Before you get too far into the merits, if you would address the threshold question of what actually is before this court at the present time, because Mr. Banji did not appeal the agency decision.
I understand that. And what is before is a motion to reconsider was filed to address the board decision of untimeliness. The motion for reconsideration filed by his counsel essentially restates the motion to accept out of time. And in that motion, Mr. Badji's counsel falls on his sword. We got it on a certain date. My staff thought that was the date that it had to be calendared. We sent it out based on the calendar date, not the decision date. The error is ours. That's why it's late. So when I received the case, I received it based off of that motion to reconsider. But jurisdiction is still an issue. The Board of Immigration Appeals has denied this because of jurisdiction, and they're wrong. It isn't jurisdictional.
But the merits of it are not before us. All we have before us is a petition for review of the denial of reconsideration,
But jurisdiction can be raised at any point.
Well, that's a court rule. That's not an agency rule.
But the motion to reconsider then addresses those issues to say there was no Lozada finding. Arguably, none of the elements of Lozada had been met. But in this case where you've got an attorney raising it themselves, it's difficult to run out and throw yourself on the mercy of this disciplinary bar and say, by the way, please make a finding here, all the
well,
letters.
Well, sure. I understand the practicalities of that, but if you would
and so to that
readdress
end,
my question,
the issue is
really not before us because all we have is the motion for reconsideration here.
I understand. And I would return to that we have that I don't believe that there's a jurisdictional rule to that aspect within, at least to my knowledge, within the Code of Federal Regs that says we can't raise jurisdiction. I believe we can at any point. Subject matter jurisdiction of a court could be raised at any point.
This isn't an argument that goes to the subject matter jurisdiction of the court. It's, as I understand your argument, you're addressing the jurisdiction of the agency.
Well, it's the Board of Immigration Appeals stated that appellate body stated they didn't have jurisdiction. So we're raising that they do have jurisdiction, but on the basis to answer counsel or the to answer your question, Your Honor, the motion to reconsider, they deny it based on it doesn't raise any new rules or any new facts. That's the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals based on the motion to reconsider. And while it is extremely bare bones, it does basically reiterate the motion to accept out of time. And so to that end, we are stating that it's an abuse of discretion if the original decision underneath is wrong. There is no analysis of the case as a whole. They say you didn't raise anything new, it's out of time, but the original decision is wrong. We have a complete abuse of discretion across the board. The only thing I can tell you is that they should have recognized the urgency of this. It had already been briefed, and yet they chose not to make any analysis. That's the point of his decision, is that everyone dropped the ball on this. They issued a briefing statement. The government didn't object to timeliness. They were clearly on notice. In the Supreme Court decision provided by counsel, Justice Ginsburg points out that no briefing had taken place in that matter, and the court noticed the computation error. The government accedes to timeliness based on their own erroneous computation. Justice Ginsburg states that the court was correct in raising the timeliness issue sus sponte because of the error of court, so it wasn't an intelligent waiver. In this point, we have an intelligent waiver of timeliness. The briefs have gone to the Board of Immigration Appeals, and then the board decides wrongly that they don't have the jurisdiction to hear the case months after this timeliness issue has been broached. Everyone accepts that the briefs are on file, it's before the board, and yet no merits are heard. It's dismissed for an erroneous assumption of the ability of the court to hear a decision, and then a conflicting decision. Then when counsel raises it, he raises essentially an equitable argument. I made an error. Don't hold it against my client. This is a significant case, as all asylum claims, at least in the eyes of counsel and their clients, are, that terrible things will happen to these people if they return. So based on that, to let stand a decision based on an erroneous assumption of law is arguably abuse of discretion. It just flies in the face of the nature of a just and fair result. There aren't specific issues I can raise as to counsel's motion to reconsider. It is, without a doubt, very bare bones. Yes, I would have loved to have had it at the first decision and been able to bring that to you, but we all wish for perfect cases and don't get them very often. I would point out then that in the argument that I'm raising regarding jurisdiction, the Justice Ginsburg decision supports my position. Even Justice Scalia's dissent supports my decision, wherein he states a rule is a rule. If they've waived it, they waived it, and I don't care. You should have denied it. The court shouldn't have intervened once the government made an error and waived untimeliness or waived the timeliness issue. It should have remained that way.
Operating on a theory that you might not have recognized that your light is on, you're into your rebuttal time.
No, I understand, Your Honor. I just caught it out of the corner of my eye, but thank you. So to that, hopefully that addresses Your Honor's question. Essentially, in this essence of the motion to reconsider, we're arguing that we can reapproach with a jurisdictional question, since the jurisdictional question that was used in the first decision is erroneous, and we feel that it taints the underlying proceedings, and I'll save the remainder.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mack.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'm Greg Mack for the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. Petitioner failed to file a timely notice of appeal with the board, and when the board dismissed his appeal, he failed to file a petition for review of that dismissal with this court. The board did not abuse its discretion when petitioner tried to resurrect his claim with a motion to reconsider that raised, as petitioner concedes in his brief at page 10, the same issues in the motion to accept the petitioner's late notice of appeal. The court is not reviewing whether the board correctly or incorrectly dismissed the notice of appeal. The court is reviewing a sort of one-level removed question, whether the board abused its discretion when it denied the motion to reconsider. As petitioner again conceded in his brief, the motion to file the late notice of appeal has the same issues in the motion to reconsider. Under the board's regulations, in a motion to reconsider, if you don't raise an error of law or fact in the board's prior decision, the board is within its rights to deny the motion to reconsider. And in this court's highly deferential level of review for abuse of discretion, when the motions raise the same issues, there's no error of law or fact raised with the prior decision, and this court should affirm the board's denial of the motion to reconsider. With respect to the Eberhardt decision, it really doesn't advance petitioner's claims because the board, through the Attorney General, has its own rule to deal with. As far as the Eberhardt decision is concerned, with judiciary's rules with respect to claim processing or jurisdictional rules, the Attorney General is entitled to have deference to his rule that a notice of appeal should be filed within 30 days, and it wasn't in this case. In any event, the Eberhardt claim is really an attack on the board's dismissal of the notice of appeal, and as we submitted in our brief, that, again, is not before the court. The Eberhardt claim is not squarely presented to this court. Again, what is before the court is the denial of the motion to reconsider. And again, as petitioner stated in his brief, the motion to reconsider contains the same issues as the motion to file the late notice of appeal. And petitioner concedes that on page 10 of his brief. We would submit, again, that the court should defer to the board's constructions of its rules, both with respect to the motion to reconsider and to with respect to the notice of appeal. Now, with respect to the Day case, we submitted the case for the point that the Supreme Court has concluded that the tribunals may sua sponte invoke their rules with respect to procedure. And that's what the board did in this case. So everybody didn't drop the ball in this case. The board noted that the case was untimely filed. The board invoked its rule, as it appropriately had to, because it goes to its jurisdiction, that a notice of appeal had to be filed within 30 days. And that did not occur here. So in that end, Your Honors, we would ask that the court affirm the decision of the board and dismiss the petition for review. If there's any questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Sean Crawford.
Your Honor, I believe we would submit the following theory really briefly. We would still position ourselves with the understanding that we understand Justice Sykes' position of where this appeal lies, that the jurisdictional issue in the first decision is wrong. That's our opinion. That's our stance in this position. Secondly, then, with respect to our position where we come in with a motion to reconsider the underlying decision, the underlying decision is based on an incorrect interpretation of the law, that the decision wasn't untimely. So when we file a motion to reconsider, that the decision not to reopen, albeit on a very thin motion to reconsider, not to reopen or reconsider an erroneous decision would be an abuse of discretion. At that point, I believe that's as far as I can push the facts that I have available to me, and I'd leave the decision to you, and hopefully you can make as much a twisted, logical decision out of the twisted mess that we have before us. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Next case is be.